Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Business First Bank, with locations throughout Baton Rouge, providing personal and commercial banking, treasury management, and wealth solution services to help clients succeed. Business First Bank, banking with greater momentum.
From Mansour's on the Boulevard, we're out to lunch with Stephanie Regal. Stephanie Regal is a broadcaster and editor of Baton Rouge Business Report. It's business Baton Rouge style.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Regal. Welcome to Out to Lunch. When it comes to the blues, Baton Rouge is one of the best-known cities on the map. Some will even tell you the blues were born right here in the Red Stick on the banks of the Mississippi, despite what those in the Mississippi Delta or Memphis might say. For more than four decades, Johnny Palazzotto has been a tireless promoter, producer, manager, and advocate of the Baton Rouge blues scene. He's helped to shape the career of dozens of artists, auditioned and signed new writers, filed copyrights, negotiated contracts for recording artists, produced and distributed albums, and produced concerts from Los Angeles to Louisiana. Palazzotto is co-founder of the Baton Rouge Blues Foundation. He produces the Slim Harpo Music Awards, and he works with a program to help public school students learn about Louisiana's music roots. And that's all before 10 o'clock in the morning, right, Johnny?
Yes.
Thanks for being here. Now, you probably agree with this. One of the shortcomings of the industry here in Baton Rouge, as great as it is that we have a lack of infrastructure to help develop homegrown talent. We've got plenty of good musicians, but historically have had to send a lot of them off to Los Angeles or Nashville to grow their careers. Trey Mon is trying to change that. This young entrepreneur opened a music studio right here in Baton Rouge on Goodwood Base Camp Studios, where he's recording the music of Baton Rouge musicians. The studio just expanded its capability this summer. Trey is here to tell us about it. Trey, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Johnny, I'll start with you. Tell us how you got started in the music industry here in Baton Rouge and what you're up to these days.
Quite a long story, Stephanie. I'll try to make it short.
Give us a short version.
I moved to Los Angeles in 1969 with a tape of a group called Cold Grits and the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, I love it.
It's five white boys and three black women. We were not very accepted here in Baton Rouge or anywhere else throughout the state of Louisiana. But I took the tape with me when I moved to Los Angeles and had the opportunity to get on to the A&M Records lot through a musician by the name of Chris Etheridge. Bless his heart, he's deceased. He was the original bass player for the Flying Burrito Brothers, originally from Meridian, Mississippi.
You just knew him? He was just a friend?
No, he was in a band that used to come through Baton Rouge on what we call the Crawfish Circuit. And he saw me at the gate at A&M Records trying to get onto the lot with this tape. I was totally a novice, didn't know what I was doing, but I knew where
literally
I wanted to be.
Literally standing at the gate.
Yes.
That's great.
And came and got me, and we played the tape for Curtis Amy, who was Lou Adler's A&R man at Ode Records. On the label at the time was Carole King and Spirit and Cheech and Chong.
Oh.
And he signed Cold Grits and the Black Eyed Peas. They recorded their album at Deep South Studios here in Baton Rouge, and I got my introduction to the music business.
Fast forward 40-something years?
Yes.
Does the Baton Rouge music scene get enough respect? I mean, and do people here realize what we have and recognize the talent that's here?
Yes, yes and no. I think you mentioned earlier about the infrastructure, which has always been a problem. But I think the young people, the young artists and musicians today seem to have a fear of representation. They think that they can do everything on their own. Of course, today the business is a lot different in that the internet makes the world accessible to exposure to music.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you don't know how to administer your stuff, and protect yourself and have experienced marketing, then you're in a sort of a limbo situation.
Yeah, and I want to get back to that in a minute because I want to talk to both you and Trey about how the internet is changing music today and how musicians make it. But let's stick with the infrastructure for a minute because that's what Basecamp Studios is trying to address, if I'm correct, to try to create a music studio here in Baton Rouge to give local musicians a place where they can go.
Yes, ma'am.
How did you get started, Trey?
When I started, very early on, all I had was a Mac Pro. I was recording on Pro Tools, which is kind of like the industry standard software.
How long ago was this? Just a couple of years?
Three years ago and some change.
Okay.
But I had a good pair of monitors, speakers to mix off of. Then I was really just doing edit work and learning about the program. Probably about half a year, 6 months after that, I expanded. I'm on the second floor of an office building. So I expanded into the attic, and actually we built a vocal booth. And we did our best to make it like as acoustically sound as possible. You know, we try to do it right. But I had this small vocal booth and a decent mic, and I started recording artists just basically off the streets. And
hip-hop artists at
hip-hop's,
first?
Hip-hop, yes, yes, ma'am.
And why did you decide to go with that genre?
I guess just my own networking and connections, it kind of just led into that. Got interned at a label in New York, so I was just kind of, I'm a hip-hop head, so
okay.
That's really where it started.
Today, the business is all about licensing.
Right.
Having your music used in a television commercial or a film or a television show.
Is that the only way they can make money today? Because they're not selling albums.
Yes, it is. Not the only way, but it is. It always has been the most, the biggest way to make money. Mm-hmm. It all starts with a song. It all starts with publishing. It all starts with the copyright. An artist can record somebody else's song and hardly make any money. The songwriter and the publisher who write the material make the money. Everybody else is on the sidelines.
Trey, tell me a little bit about where the hip-hop scene is in Baton Rouge right now and what you see going on with that. I mean, I read hip-hop names all the time. They make headlines, certainly.
It's pretty interesting. You have probably the biggest name right now, Lil Boosie from Baton Rouge. He's signed to a major label, Atlantic Records. He just released his first studio album since he got out of prison, so that was a big deal, a big mm-hmm. release for him. You have another rapper, Kevin Gates, also pretty popular right now in the game. So right there, just from Baton Rouge, those are two pretty big names in hip-hop right now.
Right. And what about the blues scene, Johnny? How is it doing today?
Well, we've lost most of the legends, the real legends.
Right.
The blues scene, though, we a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you were aware of the Slim Harpo Music Awards, Jimmy Vaughn, mm-hmm. who was Stevie Ray Vaughan's older brother, accepted the Legend Award. And he announced at the awards that his family actually lived in Baton Rouge in the mid-50s, and that the first time that he and his little brother, Stevie Ray, ever heard the blues was Louisiana blues.
Wow.
We have
that's
that on
tremendous.
Videotape, and he brought James Johnson, who is a legendary blues guitarist, up onto the stage, and they did one of Slim Harpo's songs. I think Baton Rouge has a great history and has some credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Kenny Neal, Chris Thomas King, and Larry Garner, who landed in Frankfurt, Germany this morning, is on tour over there, are carrying the banner, and I think carrying it quite well for us.
Can we legitimately lay claim to being the originator of blues, or are we one among several cities in the South?
Well, obviously, the blues is the only indigenous music of America. Mm-hmm. It did start in Louisiana. It started in New Orleans and migrated up the Mississippi River, up Highway 61, up the railroads. into Memphis and Chicago. They have no claim to being the origins of the blues in America. And I don't think Baton Rouge can claim to be that specific city, but we've always had a very prominent blues heritage. Tabby Thomas, Rifle Neal,
sure.
Henry Gray, who is 92 years old and still at it.
So you mentioned these legends that we're losing, that are aging. Is there a younger generation that's taking
yeah.
their place?
Yes, there is. And I mentioned Kenny and
sure.
Chris and Larry Garner, Tyree Neal, the grandson of Rifle Neal, who's more of maybe a hip-hop artist than a blues artist. He records his own stuff, I think. I don't know where some of these people are recording.
With technology today, I suppose it's easier and easier for them to do it on their own.
That's
right?
The thing. It's the price point and the level of quality. You know, the price point's never been lower, and the level of quality they're getting from the gear that they can obtain on their own to just track in their home or their living room, it's never been easier or better for them. So most of the time, I'm getting sessions that were recorded somewhere else, and we're just mixing them and fine-tuning them, really getting them sound right.
But so you, as an entrepreneur trying to make a living with this new studio, I mean, maybe if you're an older, established musician, you might go to Johnny because you know his reputation. How do you go out there and compete to try to get recording artists or upstart musicians to come record with you at Basecamp?
Well, I'd say a lot of the musicians that I record, most of them are amateur musicians. And I'm young. I'm just getting started myself. So they probably come to me because they feel a level of comfortability, I imagine. And I'm also, like, very enthusiastic, and I'm trying to, you know, put together the best track I can no matter what I'm working with. So I help them on, like, the production aspect and to just spice up their tracks. Most of the time, people come with their own instrumentals, and they're getting them off the internet, and they're just laying vocals on top of, like, an already, you know, an instrumental that's already been produced, like, who
okay.
knows where. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
but as far as like going out and getting recruiting like talent to come to the studio, I'm still getting into that. With the, you know, my capabilities expanding, I feel like I'm finally at the point where I can approach an artist seriously and have something legitimate to offer them.
Okay.
More than just hip hop.
Well, speaking of young entrepreneurs on the Baton Rouge music scene, we have an aspiring entrepreneur who has invented a unique and useful product for marching bands. Garrett Kessling is a member himself of the best-known marching band in Baton Rouge, the LSU Tigers Marching Band, and his company is Tonal Innovation. We met Garrett through the Louisiana Business and Technology Center. The LBTC is a business incubator that offers the resources of LSU to entrepreneurs and innovators. So, Garrett, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Hi, nice. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your product, which you've invented, and what it does.
Well, the product is called the eFlip, and what the hope is to replace what's known now as the flip folder. And what a flip folder is, it just holds countless pages of sheet music. It's very heavy. It bends. People don't want to carry it around. They don't want to lug it around with them. So what I invented was something that you could place your iPhones or cellular devices or tablets, like an iPad or something, and you can hold it, put all your digital sheet music on top on it, and you can just have it wherever you go. Everyone always has their phone with them.
Right.
They never forget that at home. So if, you know, you forget your flip folder at practice, you have your phone. So that's what we've been trying to do. And it all came about when I was just sitting in a music rehearsal one day at LSU. In fact, it was last November, and a friend of mine, we were looking at this really, really small piece of music, and he was just joking, put his two fingers on it, and tried to expand it, just joking, say, why is it not getting bigger? And so I just thought about it, well, why don't we have something where we can just expand the music? Like, why is the marching band world the only thing that doesn't keep up with technology? So then I started thinking, and I went to a professor of mine at LSU, one of my entrepreneurial classes, and he said, well, go check out the LBTC. They might be able to help you. You have an idea. Just go talk to them. So I made an appointment with them, and they went ahead. They accepted me in there just with an idea.
That is great.
Yeah, and then they have a great team over there of student engineers and all that stuff, and I worked with him, Vinny, and we came up with the first prototype, and we used it at the bowl game against Notre Dame last December.
Okay.
And early January. And
so the Tiger Marching Band actually used your product?
Correct.
During
just
the
one
bowl game. Just
yeah,
one. Okay.
Just one. We just want to give it a dry run through. And during that first practice that morning when we were using it, everyone was coming up to me, is that an iPad? Or, yeah, it's an iPad. And they said, where do we buy one? And I said, well, this is just a prototype. I haven't, you know, it's not for sale yet. And then so they advised me at the LBTC, get some legal protection from it. Mm-hmm. So we went ahead. The patent's pending for it. And so then we went back and redesigned it, made it lighter, made it stronger, made it look better. And so then we have the final product. And now we are looking at manufacturing in China. And excellent. I got a loan from my grandfather, and now it's moving.
Excellent. And do you have you gotten before any other bands at this point, or making sales calls?
Well, I spoke with my director at my high school in Destrehan, Louisiana, and I told her about it and showed her about it. The problem was I wasn't allowed to talk about it yet to anyone or try and make a sale because it wasn't legally protected. And so when I got that done, I showed her, and the first thing she said was, as soon as that's done, let me know. I want to buy them. The thing directors are most excited about, and I talked to the associate director of bands at LSU, and his same thing was, it will save so much money on printing because you can use it, you can just email all of your sheet music to whoever that needs it. And all of your marching drill, the marching drill is how we know what to form on the field. So if it's a star or a circle or a square, and you can just have that on your iPad or on your phone. And so you don't have to print big books of pages, and you could just have them on your phone.
What's amazing to me is that nobody else has come up with this idea. I mean, it seems like you say that...
Yeah, we had tons of, just countless hours of just searching, and even the people at the LBTC, that was their thing to say. They came to me countless times saying, I cannot believe
that
no one has done this. When as soon as you left the first time you were here, we all searched and searched and searched, and there was nothing like it. In fact, the only thing I could find close to a band using technology was Ohio State Marching Band. They use iPads for marching drill. But the problem is they still cannot connect it to their instruments. They can't walk around with their sheet music on there. And so hopefully that'll solve this
problem. That's part of the genius of your idea.
And the great thing is it connects to your existing, it's called a lyre.
Okay.
That's what connects your flip folder to your instrument. So it connects just like a flip folder does. So you don't have to go out and buy something different. All you would need would be this eFlip.
You mentioned the marching band world is sort of slow to adopt technology. That wouldn't be true, Johnny, in the rest of the music industry. How has technology changed
what you do?
Was it?
Oh, yes. Napster and MP3 totally ruined the business, but mostly because the business people themselves, the record companies, were, I don't know how to express it any other way than they were dumb.
They were just asleep at the wheel.
Yeah,
they just saw this coming.
Didn't see it coming at all. I mean,
They still haven't recovered, have they?
No, they haven't. iTunes made sense, finally.
Yes.
Napster could have been if they would have negotiated with Napster instead of letting it run free. I was speaking at LSU mass comp classes, and the kids were sitting there bootlegging in class on their iPhones. And I had to explain to them that you're infringing on somebody's copyright. How would you like it if your music was being bootlegged and you weren't getting your royalties because it was being stolen? The record companies could have prevented that, but really they didn't see it.
But you mentioned iTunes, for instance. I don't know what the numbers show. I just know anecdotally, young people aren't using iTunes like I was. I mean, my kids, they all get it now off of Spotify or...
Spotify and YouTube.
And they get the free one, which is terrible.
Well, it's terrible in a sense, but it's not so terrible in it. Spotify is becoming the new radio. YouTube is the new MTV. And YouTube is basically a much broader thing than MTV was. What the key here is that an artist today has to be out on tour, has to be out getting in front of people. If you're not getting out in front of people, then nobody wants to listen to your product again. If they want to listen to it again, they're going to go look for it. YouTube, you have to have if you are on top of the game, your music is licensed to YouTube.
Okay.
And every time your music gets played on YouTube, it's logged.
So then the artist will get a royalty.
Now the
for
royalty
that.
The royalties are very low.
They've
because
teeny.
it is. It's teeny. And Spotify gets statements that I have 50 listings of 1 cent each. But those are things that are going to grow as time goes on. It might not be as beneficial to me as I want it to be in my lifetime, but in the future, it is the future of the performance monies.
So we know, for instance, someone like Taylor Swift is you know, so strict about this, but you can sort of understand why. What about the local guy? What about the local blues musician? This is maybe why they need a Johnny Palazzotto.
Yes, again and no. I really wish Taylor Swift would have thought about it a little bit more before she did what she did, because the money, the performance money to be paid is not really there yet. You don't have as many millions of people going on Spotify as you do on traditional radio. So the listenership and the numbers of people listening don't justify the amount of royalties that someone like Taylor Swift expects to get. She's a major star. I mean, you know, so she would probably get, if her statement came out, she'd probably get 10 cents where everybody else is getting a penny. You know, it's the evolution of the business has not gotten to the point to where it was in, say, 1999 or 2000, you know, before MP3 and Napster exploded.
You know, and it's so fascinating to explore that topic. We could talk about that all day. But now we're going to check the inbox to see what questions have come in from listeners. Johnny, this question comes from Jane Kelly, and she wonders what you see as the business model of the future for musicians, if you had to guess. I know we've touched on that, but...
Writing music and songs. As being as prolific as you possibly can, touching on topics that maybe haven't been exploited. You know, what makes a song recognizable and is a lot of times emotional. Staying away from trite lyrics, but writing songs.
How do you get them heard today when there's just so much out there? In the old days, it was get it to you, and you'd get it on the local radio station, and then it was either a hit or it wasn't. But now there's so much.
That's still applicable.
Okay.
But having someone such as myself, and there are others. I don't know of many in Baton Rouge, but there are other people that are always interested in new artists and new recordings. That can get it exposed. Exploiting music is what it's all about. I mean, if you can't get it to the right people and you can't get it on the radio or you can't get it listed on iTunes or CD Baby or Rhapsody or Spotify and YouTube, all of the mediums that are out there today, and then again having it registered and licensed with ASCAP and BMI and all of the... you know, if you're a commercial artist and you're putting out CDs and you got 12 recordings, you're eligible to be a member of the Recording Academy, which is the organization that gives out Grammys. I'm fortunate enough to be a board of governor of the Memphis chapter.
Well, congratulations.
And you know, we are recruiting artists in Baton Rouge right now. We just signed 4 new members.
Can you tell us who they are?
Yeah, John Gray of Michael Foster Project.
Okay.
Michael Foster.
They're great.
Herman Jackson, who was B.B. King's drummer until B.B.'s passing. And also a Mississippi fellow by the name of Kern Pratt, who just put out a CD called Broken Chains.
Okay.
He's getting a lot of international recognition.
Oh, I'm so glad to know that. We'll have to look for them. Wonderful. Well, Trey, this question comes from Elizabeth Ryan, and she asks, who's the most famous musician you've worked with so far? Somebody maybe we've heard of?
Probably the most famous overall would be Mystical.
Sure.
I recorded him a few times this month. It was all early on. And mostly when I see him, it's just feature work that he's doing. Once again, just they'll send you the track with like everything. It's just one track when you pull it up, and it's got the vocals and the instrumental in it, and it has an open verse. And I'll record his verse and any backing tracks that he wants to do. Every now and then, he does come with something really fun and interesting. I recorded a clean hook for Mark Ronson's Feel Right, but I don't think it was ever used.
Okay. And how did you get connected with Mystical?
When I got into recording, he had heard about the studio from, I guess, just like outside.
That's great. Yeah, that face-to-face, like Johnny was talking about, personal connections.
Yep.
Okay, well, Garrett, your question comes from Joseph Clifton. He wants to know, what's next for Total Innovation? More band products, or would you want to take this and expand into different areas, or other kind of technological gadgets, maybe?
Well, I've given that a lot of thought, and actually, we have a few more products that are going to be introduced into the marching band world, like the eFlip, but to hold different things. I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want the idea to be stolen, but definitely look forward to some more marching band products. Usually, the things I think of are just perfect marching band. I've been in marching band since a little kid, middle school, high school, now college, and marching band's just my favorite thing so far, and that's what it's going to be geared towards.
Well, excellent. All right. Well, Johnny Palazzotto, Tremont, and Garrett Kessling, y'all have been a fabulous bunch of guests today. I love your different perspectives on the music industry and the different things each of you is doing to make the Baton Rouge music scene more successful. So thank you all so much for being here today and joining me on Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
It was fun. My guests on Out to Lunch today have been Baton Rouge music producer Johnny Palazzotto, Tremont of Basecamp Studios, and Garrett Kessling, founder of Tonal Innovation. You can find out more about Johnny Palazzotto, Basecamp Studios, and Tonal Innovation by following the links on our websites, wrkf.org and itsbatonrouge.la. Today's show is recorded live over lunch at Mansur's on the Boulevard in Baton Rouge. Mansur's serves lunch daily from 11 to 2, dinner nightly, and brunch on Saturdays and Sundays. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our associate producer is Peter Raschuti. And our Baton Rouge business consultants are Charlie D'Agostino and Ann Edelman. The music on Out to Lunch is written and performed by Mitchell Foreman. And you can see photos from this show on itsbatonrouge.la and on our Facebook page. These photos are taken by Ken Stewart. You can get this show as a podcast, you can listen to past shows, and you can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites, itsbatonrouge.la and wrkf.org. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsbatonrouge.la and WRKF 89.3 FM. I'm Stephanie Riegel. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you again next week around the table here at Mansour's for more business Baton Rouge style on Out to Lunch.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Business First Bank, with locations throughout Baton Rouge, providing personal and commercial banking, treasury management, and wealth solution services to help clients succeed. Business First Bank, banking with greater momentum.